This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Our guest, filmmaker Jeffrey Blitz, has a gift for bringing the joy and anxiety of adolescence to the screen. His documentary Spellbound, which followed eight young finalists for the National Spelling Bee, won wide critical acclaim and an Oscar nomination. Blitz's new feature film, Rocket Science, is about Hal Hefner, a high school kid who has a stutter and is convinced by senior Jenny Ryerson to go out for the debate team. He struggles with debate but falls for the girl, who it turns out is playing a very sophisticated game with the underclassmen. Blitz, who wrote and directed Rocket Science, based the story in part on his own experiences. He grew up with a stutter and got into debate in high school in part to overcome it. In this scene from Rocket Science, Hal, played by Reese Daniel Thompson, struggles to order food at the school cafeteria.
Fish or pizza?
The
pizza's plain or pep. Fish is not sure. Like general fish.
Yeah,
the fish?
The general fish.
Yes, please. Come back for seconds. Plenty left.
Thank you, ma'am.
Well, Jeffrey Blitz, welcome to Fresh Air. Your film Rocket Science, as we noted, is about this young man, Hal Hefner, who has a stuttering problem and then ends up getting drawn into the debating club as a way of, well he's induced by this interesting character, Jenny. You had a stuttering problem in high school, and I guess to some extent still do, and also got into debate in high school. Was it a way of overcoming that?
Yeah, I did not get lured onto my debate team by an attractive girl.
no such luck.
Yeah, no. I think that I joined the team because I was trying to prove to myself and to the world that I could do the very thing that it seemed like I should be incapable of doing, which would be speaking fluently and engaging in public speaking at all. So while the story sort of becomes the background for Hal in the movie, it was really a foregrounded story for me in my life. Debate became the thing that I was obsessed with most as a junior and senior in high school.
Did you excel?
Well, I ended up doing much better than Hal necessarily ends up doing in the movie. I stuck with it beyond the point at which, you know, we sort of take leave of Hal in the film. But I actually ended up with my debating partner, won the New Jersey State Championships. That was in my senior year. When I first started in my sophomore year of high school, I could barely speak at all. And the first round that I went to debate in, I got stuck trying to say one word, and I was too pigheaded to move off of that word. So 8 minutes later, I was still trying to say that one word, and I left the poor opposing team to have to respond to the sound,
So you literally stood in front of a room of your opponents and judges for 8 minutes without getting that syllable out?
That's right, yeah. It takes a certain kind of dense brain to want to do that.
Well, and some fortitude to not give up and run from the room.
No, I think one of the things that's interesting and frustrating about stuttering is that even to a stutterer, it's a condition that's hard to fathom. You know the word that you want to say. It's at the forefront of your thoughts, and you just can't make your mouth form that word. And so I think that you're ever hopeful that it will just slip through somehow. So at the beginning of that 8 minutes of trying to say the word, I didn't know that I was going to be locked into that 8 minutes later. It just sort of evolved that way.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the characters. The central character, Hal Hefner, one of the interesting little affects that he has, he carries around not a book bag, but a suitcase on rollers like people would be seen pulling through an airport. What was that about?
Well, it's a suitcase that in the movie he inherits from his father, who leaves the family at the beginning of the film. So in some sense, to me, it's a way of keeping the father alive in the movie, so that even though he's not present in it, his spirit is there somehow. But also, I like the idea that these are kids who are trapped in at a moment in life where they're locked halfway between childhood and adulthood. And that Hal has graduated from a normal book bag and instead he's got the more adult suitcase feels like it's the perfect way to underscore the exact moment that he finds himself in.
Right. Now, there are different ways that people stutter. And I guess you had some sense of what you wanted in this performance. And you hired a speech therapist, is that right, to work with him on this part of the performance?
Yeah, we had a speech therapist for one day because we were a low-budget film. Ordinarily, you probably would have had a speech coach on for the whole shoot if you had enough money, if it were a bigger Hollywood production. We got a speech therapist out for one day who had to essentially do his work backwards. You know, most days the speech therapist teaches kids how not to stutter, and here he had to instruct Reese on sort of what to do with his mouth and his breathing and, so that Reese could understand what some of the physical manifestations were of it. And then I think because I wrote the stutter to be much like my own stutter, I was able to really guide Reese, and I was able to know when it felt authentic and when it didn't.
You know, one of the interesting things, when I went back having looked at the film once, and I went back to look at it again in part to see if there were some moments I would want to pull out for the interview, I noticed something I hadn't noticed the first time, which is that you use a narrator in a few points to describe internal thoughts or to kind of move the story. You don't use a narrator in your documentary, Spellbound, although
right.
you do use type on the screen. And I'm wondering what role you saw the narrator playing in this film.
Well, for me, in Rocket Science, so much of the movie is about the struggle to find your own voice, and meaning voice in the sort of bigger sense, the struggle to figure out how you're going to present what's inside you to the world. And so I love the idea that my lead character is this completely inarticulate kid, and that there's another character in the film who's nothing but a pure and disembodied voice. I mean, it's almost like the way most people associate people on the radio, in a way that you don't think of the actual human body that houses that voice. It just, you know, you, sir, just exist as a voice for most people, I think.
Right.
And so I really love the idea of a character in the film that was nothing but voice. And in some sense, it's the fantasy that Hal has of a kind of clean and perfect life where whatever you want to say, you say. You have, a thought that is particularly eloquent or that has a sentence strung together in a really beautiful way, and you're just able to say it, to come out and say it. I think that's a powerful fantasy for a kid who's struggling to find his own voice.
I wonder if doing this film that's a story about an adolescent kid who stutters and immersing yourself in that subject has given you any new insight into your own adolescence as a stuttering kid or just speech in general in your own life.
Well, the funny thing is actually that when I was writing the script for Rocket Science, I was going through a terrible period of stuttering myself, which kind of comes and goes in my adult life. But it was really bad, and I went to see different speech therapists for it, and I could barely talk on the telephone. And so all of that stuff that Hal goes through in the movie related to stuttering, trying to order a particular kind of food that you want to eat and not being able to say that very thing, those were things that I was not only lived as an adolescent, but that I was living while I was working on the script. In fact, while I was working on the script, at one point I was visiting a friend who was shooting a movie in Northern Africa, and I was in my hotel room, and I was trying to order a hamburger from room service. And hamburger was the one thing that I could not say. And it just arrived at a point of high comedy when the room service person read the entire menu back to me so that I could just say, wait, stop. Yes, that's it. And she skipped over hamburger. She kept going. And so it fed into the scenes that I was writing at the time of Hal's frustration. And it was a very real thing for me even in that moment.
Well, what do you think was going on? Do you think that your focus on stuttering was intensifying your own issue with it?
I'm sure. That stutterers, end up in the strange place where if you think too much about your stuttering. If you focus on it too much, you tend to screw yourself up. But if you don't think about it enough, then you can run headfirst into a brick wall with it. So you have to occupy this very slippery turf where you're aware of it, but you pretend not to be aware of it. And that's the way that you achieve a kind of a fluency.
Wow. Sounds like a fair amount of mental work that you got to do.
Well, it's funny. Yeah. Like there are people who say that a lot of stutterers are very thin, and it's because of how much energy gets put into just normal speech acts during the day. It can be really exhausting.
I know that stuttering is situational for a lot of people, and that sometimes people overcome it by adopting an accent, for example. And I'm wondering, when you're on a movie set as director, you're the authority figure. I mean, you've got to tell a lot of people who are all being paid to be there what to do. And doing it crisply, I suppose, matters. Do you find you stutter less in that role?
You know, I think that there are two kind of opposing things that are going on there. On the one hand, you don't want to stutter when you're commanding a cast and crew, really. And so I think you do whatever you can to try to be fluent there. But it is a high-stress situation, and I think stuttering is generally more likely to come out in situations of high stress. So I would tend to stutter terribly on the telephone when I was working on Rocket Science, to the point where I would routinely have to spell words that I couldn't say. And I was always deeply embarrassed about that because I thought, here I am, the guy who made the Spelling Bee documentary, and now I resort to having to spell words out to people. It was just an embarrassment. But when I was on set, I tended to do quite well with it. And I don't know whether there's a part of my brain that just jumped back to my days of public speaking in high school, and I adopted that more authoritative tone. I'm not exactly sure, because again, you try, when it's working quite well, you try not to think so much about it.
I read that you're a big fan of Hal Ashby's films, who made Shampoo and Harold and Maude.
Being there, coming home.
There's sort of an absurdist sort of feel to some of these characters.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I watched a lot of Hal Ashby films over and over again when I was working on the script and when I was prepping Rocket Science, because I felt like Ashby is amazing at having characters that you feel deeply for. I mean, they feel like they're people that you recognize from your own world, but at the same time, they're doing things that are patently absurd. And he was able to blend absurdist comedy and sort of a naturalism of character and performance in a way that I just loved and that I tried to emulate in Rocket Science.
Well, let's talk about Spellbound, which was a tremendous success. It was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary. You know, a reviewer said that this movie held as much tension as Apollo 13, and I'm wondering what made you think a spelling bee would be a great dramatic story.
I was determined to put Apollo 13 in its place. When I was getting out of grad school in film, I one day happened to be watching ESPN, and I can't even remember what the sporting event was that I was watching. It ended, and the final rounds of the National Spelling Bee came on. This was in 1997, and I was blown away by it. I had never been in a spelling bee at all. I think they were considered too kind of quaint or lowbrow for the schools that I went to, and I'd never seen a bee before. And I was just instantly rapt. I just thought it was amazing. And for anyone who's seen the National Bee, you know that there's a crazy amount of tension that is sort of built up there. And it's also something akin, I think, to watching a great magic trick. But instead of a rabbit being pulled out of a hat, there is an amazing SAT word that's being pulled out of a little kid, you know, who has no right to know what that word means, right, or how to spell it. So I just knew instantly that there was a great story in there. And then I spent most of 1998 doing research to figure out which kids to cover. And then Sean Welch, who's my producing partner, and I hit the road in 1999 to cover these kids in the National Bee.
Well, I wanted to play a clip from it. And this is April, who is a speller from Ambler, Pennsylvania, actually not so far from the studio where we are today. And in this clip, we hear her talking about herself, and then we hear her not-so-intellectual parents. I mean, her dad owns a bar called the Easy Street Pub. So let's listen to this clip from Spellbound.
Besides spelling, I like to ride roller coasters. And I'm a vegetarian. And I like to drink coffee.
Here's another one. Look, I can't even pronounce these words. It's rather sad, but I know she can. It's just a world of knowledge here. I want to go back to school, tell you the truth.
No, I've been working in the bar business 45 years. Yeah, I was born across the tracks. That was the Depression Center back there. That was all the houses for the people that worked in the asbestos mill. And then they found out that the asbestos, the stuff was coming up, seeping through the ground, so they closed it all off now. There's a lot of people in this town have asbestosis, died from cancer. So I didn't go far. I went from that side of the street to this side of the street, really. Not a real success story.
And that's from the film Spellbound, which was the documentary made by my guest, Jeffrey Blitz. This is one of many moments in the film where we see kids and their parents in some cases in moments that, expose some things about them that some people might not find so flattering. We see, Harry, the kid with all of his weird kind of affects. And I wondered, there's sometimes a fine line between a presentation that can mock a kid's awkwardness and something that really appreciates him as an individual. And I wondered if you confronted and wrestled with that as you made the film.
Well, sure. I mean, I do think it's something that we talked a lot about. Jana Gorskaya, who edited the movie, and I had long conversations about what was too much, when it wasn't enough. But I think that if you treat your subjects with honesty and with decency, that comes through, and that if your intention from the beginning with them is not to mock or to make fun of, but to embrace, them in terms of all of who they are, and not just the stuff that is overwhelmingly positive, but all these things that people have, the tics that people have, it's a way of embracing humankind there, and I think that comes through in a strong way, I hope, I think it's okay to laugh with or even laugh at people when they say or do things that are funny, and I don't think that you feel any less for them. In fact, in some respects, I think that you feel even more for them because they were so willing to open up and share of themselves like that. I think it's an act of dishonesty when a portrait of someone is carved up in a way so that you try to not offend. I don't think you're showing the real human being anymore.
Tell us a little about the opening scene with Harry. Harry's the kid, right?
Harry,
struggling over this word.
Yeah, right. The word was bands. And it was one of the great moments at that year's Nationals. He just, he was incredibly persistent in trying to spell this word right and to figure it out. And he is such an open kid. I mean, he shares the emotion that he feels. He shares on his face immediately. And he was in agony over it, trying to figure out what the proper spelling for it was. So we do a condensed version of it in the movie, but I have a palpable memory of it. It goes on for a long time. I mean, he was up on stage probably for about 5 minutes trying to battle through that word. I think there's obviously something that's entertaining and funny about it, but there's something really great. There's a kind of courage that it takes to stand up there and to fight to go after a word you don't know. I thought it was a marvelous moment.
And did he get it right?
He did not.
Well, why don't we listen to that clip? This is the opening scene from Jeffrey Blitz's documentary Spellbound. This is Harry struggling over a very difficult word.
The word is bands.
With a D sound or without a D sound? You said it's a homonym, and you told me what it means, but am I allowed to ask what its homonym means? All right, I'm starting over. B-A-N-D. What I have so far is B-A-N-D. I don't know if that was a great idea, but Oops, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Oh, well.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, sitting in for Terry Gross. We're speaking with filmmaker Jeffrey Blitz. He directed the Oscar-nominated documentary Spellbound and has a new feature film called Rocket Science. He also directed a couple of episodes of the NBC comedy The Office. Here's a taste of one of the episodes called The Negotiation.
Daryl, you are a good worker and a good man.
Are you wearing lady clothes?
What?
That there's a woman's suit.
Okay.
This is going to make me feel better. Okay. This is too good. All right.
I asked Jeffrey Blitz how he got involved with The Office.
Right after Spellbound came out, I went in to meet with Greg Daniels, who's the showrunner on The Office, and they hadn't yet done the pilot for the American version, and so I was taking a meeting, essentially, about doing the pilot for that. And I think NBC very quickly told Greg that he was high if he thought that they were going to let him hire a guy who had just done one documentary about a spelling bee. Later, after the show turned into a hit, and I think they gave Greg a lot more latitude as to who to hire, he very kindly said, I want that Blitz guy back. So I ended up doing a couple episodes for them last season, and I'm hoping I'm going to get to do some more this upcoming season.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you did Spellbound, which is the documentary, and then you've got this feature film, and then The Office is fictional made as a documentary.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely right. And one of the great things about that show is that when they talk about a shot on the show or, you know, how to set up a camera move, you don't just say you start wide and then you go into a close-up in the way that you would on a feature film. The whole thing has to be motivated as if it's a real documentary. So you discuss it by saying the cameraman sees this thing, you know, he's focused on Jim and Pam, you know, at the front desk, but then he sees Michael is doing something in his office and he swings the camera over. So it's all motivated in the way that it really would be were there a real documentary crew there. Of course, you have the luxury of a phenomenally funny and talented cast,
right,
a great writing staff, and multiple takes. So it's not really true to the documentary form in that way.
You know, there are many moments in The Office where the characters have these pained expressions as these embarrassing things are happening. And there are moments, awkward moments in Spellbound with these kids, and certainly in Rocket Science, and probably a lot of things that that makes audiences uncomfortable. I mean, are you kind of drawn to that kind of movie making?
Sure. I mean, I do think people have pointed out that there's a cringe factor in Rocket Science and in Spellbound and in The Office for sure. What's funny is, and I think this is just where I'm not in sync with the rest of the world, because the things that other people cringe at, I just take pure pleasure in. And I think it's because I can sort of wander into those minefields so happily that I'm comfortable tapping into all of that sort of stuff. I guess I just, maybe growing up as a stutterer means that you don't embarrass as easily as a lot of other people would.
How did you get into filmmaking?
Yeah, when I got to college, I thought I was going to be a lawyer. And actually, my parents set me up to do an internship the summer after my freshman year with a friend of theirs who was a lawyer at a big New York firm. And when I went at the beginning of the summer to meet the person who was going to hire me, I walked through this row of offices of lawyers in the law firm, and they looked so miserable. They all looked so miserable that by the time I got to the office where I was going to have my interview, I said, thanks, but no thanks. And I turned around and I left, which is a really obnoxious thing to do after my parents had set that up. But I just decided that I couldn't have a life that would have me arrive in one of these offices at some point. So I decided to get into creative writing. And
I just got to interrupt and say, that's like a moment out of a movie.
Yeah.
It's like this turning point in your life.
I know. And the thing is, I had awareness that it felt like a strong kind of movie moment. I also remember looking down at my shoes and realizing that the shoes that I had chosen to wear were all wrong, and that if I was meant to be a lawyer, I would have chosen the right shoes somehow. Anyway, so I through the writing department, there were film classes offered, and now that I was liberated from the fear of going to law school, I could take classes even though they might not look good on, you know, on my college transcript. So I took a Films of Alfred Hitchcock class, and it changed everything for me. I suddenly saw that movies could be works of art in addition to pieces of entertainment. And up until that time, it had never really occurred to me that they could be. And suddenly, from the very first movie we saw, which was The 39 Steps, my whole understanding of film just got turned upside down.
Well, Jeffrey Blitz, it's been great having you. Thanks so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Filmmaker Jeffrey Blitz, his new movie is called Rocket Science.